rise above, we're breaking through. No more lies, just me and you. Hearts aligned, we'll find the way. Together, we'll seize the day.
Beyond the divide, we'll stand as one.
Chasing truth
till
the fight is won. From the shadows to the light we strive. United we thrive. Beyond the divide.
Welcome to Beyond the Divide, everybody. Today I want to unravel the intricate story of Israel and Gaza, not as victors or vanquished, but as neighbors bound by a shared soil soaked in generations of strife and longing. As of today, indirect peace talks flicker like a candle in the wind. There's been a bold U.S.-led plan that hangs in the balance. Hamas is weighing amendments to that plan, while Israeli operations in Gaza City continue. We're going to journey back through time, weaving biblical parables with the raw threads of history, spotlighting the flashpoints like the Temple Mount, and peering ahead to what a fragile peace accord might weave for both peoples and the world watching from the wings. No sides taken here, guys, just the human mosaic: pain, resilience, and the ache for peace. I just started the Middle East 101 course through PragerU, and honestly, I encourage you all of you to listen to it. It's a free course. There's no sides taken. They simply go back to the beginning and they talk about every single event through the history of the world that has brought us to where we are today, chasing peace for the Middle East. Picture this: a vast sun-baked plain where nomads once bartered under olive trees. This isn't fantasy, it's the cradle of our tale, stretching from sacred scrolls to today's headlines. So let's begin where it all started, the roots in the dust of antiquity. Our story opens not with swords, but with a promise. In the book of Genesis, Abraham stands on a hill overlooking the land that we now call Israel and Gaza. A strip of coastline hugging the Mediterranean Sea. Very fertile, but very fierce. God whispers to him, "To your offspring I will give this land." A covenant that is etched in the stars and the sands of the sea. But here's the twist. Generations later still wrestle with the fact that Abraham's heirs split like branches from one trunk. Isaac, the father of the Israelites, inherits the core promise, while Ishmael, his firstborn son through Hagar, receives blessings of nations, kings, and a wild spirit. Scholars can see the echoes here: Jews tracing to Isaac, Arabs to Ishmael, both sons of the same father, destined for kinship, yet rivalry. All right, guys, close your eyes and imagine with me a sun-scorched hill in Canaan, where olive groves whisper secrets to the wind and the Jordan River carves its lazy path like a vein of silver. Here lives a man named Isaac. He was the son of Abraham, heir to a promise as vast as the stars, land, descendants, a covenant etched in the heart of God. Isaac's wife, Rebekah, carried twins in her womb, and oh, what a storm they brewed even before their first cry. The babies jostled like rival warriors, one pressing the other aside until Rebekah cried out to the Lord in agony. His answer came like thunder rolling over the desert. Two nations are in your womb, and two people from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the elder will serve the younger. On a day when the tent flaps like weary sails in the hot sirocco, the twins arrived. First came Esau, Ruddy as the earth itself, his tiny body was covered in a pelt of hair that made the midwives gasp and chuckle. He was a wild thing from the start. He was born for the hunt, his fists clenched as if grasping at the horizon. Hard on his heels came Jacob, his hand gripping his brother's ankle like a climber seizing a ledge. Jacob, meaning heel grabber, the subplanter, smooth-skinned and quiet, eyes that held the cunning of foxes under the moonlight. The boys grew like thorns and vines entwined. Esau, the elder by mere minutes, became Isaac's favorite. A son of the bow and the spear, he roamed the fields at dawn, his quiver slung low, tracking gazelles through the scrub with the instinct of a lion. His laughter boomed across the valleys, and he returned home with pelts and tails that lit fires in the family's eyes. Jacob, Rebecca's shadow, tended the flocks with a shepherd's patience. He was the thinker, the one who watched the stars wheel overhead and pondered their paths, his mind a loom weaving plans from the threads of tomorrow. One fateful evening, as the sun bled crimson into the sea, Esau staggered back from the hunt, his body racked with hunger after a fruitless chase. The air smelled of dust and sweat, and his stomach gnawed like a trapped beast. There, by the tent's entrance, Jacob stirred a pot of red lentil stew, thick, steaming, spiced with wild herbs that curled invitingly into the twilight. Esau collapsed at his brother's feet, a voice rasp. Quick, let me eat some of that red stuff. I'm starving. Jacob's eyes gleamed, sharp as flint. He saw the moment for what it was, a crack in the elder's armor. First, sell me your birthright, he said, his tone even, like a trader bartering salt for gold. Esau laughed, a hollow bark. What was a birthright, he thought, a dusty old title? A double portion of inheritance against the fire in his belly. Look, I'm about to die, he scoffed. What good is the birthright to me? With a careless oath, he sealed the pact, slurping the stew as if it were blood of his future. Jacob watched, silent, the weight of that heel grab from birth now a chain around his brother's neck. Years rolled on like the seasons, and age bowed Isaac's shoulders. His eyes grew dim as smoked glass, yet his heart still hungered for the savor of the wild. One day, he called Esau close, his voice a threadbare whisper. My son, take your bow and quiver. Go out to the open country and hunt some wild game for me. Prepare a tasty dish as you know I like it, and bring it to me to eat so that I may give you my blessing before I die. Esau nodded, his hunter's heart swelling, and slipped into the dusk like a shadow. But Rebecca had overheard, and her maternal fire kindled. She loved Jacob with a fierceness that bordered on fate. Remembering the oracle's words, listen, she hissed to her smooth-skinned son. Your father is telling Esau to hunt and prepare a meal for his blessing. Go to the flocks. Bring me two choice kids. I'll prepare the savory dish your father loves. Then you take it to him, and you will receive his blessing instead. Jacob hesitated, fear flickered in his eyes. But mother, Esau is hairy. I am smooth. If father touches me, he'll know I'm tricking him, and I'll bring a curse upon myself. Rebecca's gaze was like iron. Let the curse fall on me, my son. Just obey. The deed unfolded like a dream woven from deceit. Jacob draped himself in Esau's best clothes, the scent of earth and sweat clinging to the wool. Rebecca wrapped the kid's skins over his arm and neck, a rough disguise that prickled like guilt. In his hands, the steaming dish, on his tongue, a lie. I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Please, sit up and eat some of my game so that you may give me your blessing. Isaac's hands trembled as they roamed Jacob's disguised form, feeling the coarse hair, inhaling the familiar aroma. The voice is the voice of Jacob, he murmured, but the hands are the hands of Esau. Doubt yielded to desire, and Isaac ate, then laid his hands on the deceiver's head. May God give you of heaven's dew and of earth's richness, an abundance of grain and new wine. May people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be lord over your brothers, and may the sons of your mother bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be everyone who blesses you. The words hung in the air like smoke from a sacred fire, irrevocable, ancient as the covenant itself. When Esau returned, his arms laden with venison, and learned of the theft, his roar shattered the camp. The days of mourning for my father are near, and then I will kill my brother, Jacob. Rebecca, ever the weaver of escapes, bundled her favorite son away under cover of night. Flee to my brother Laban in Haran, she urged. Stay until your brother's fury fades. Isaac, unwitting architect of exile, blessed Jacob once more for the road. May you take a wife from among the daughters of Aram. Do not take a Canaanite wife. May God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful. 20 years Jacob wandered in that foreign soil, a stranger in his uncle's house. Laban, crafty as kin, bound him in labor for Rachel's hand. 7 years that flew like days in love's fever, only to wake to Leah's veil at the wedding feast. Another 7 for Rachel, the beloved. Children bloomed like desert flowers. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Dan and Naphtali, Gad and Asher, Issachar, Zebulun and Dinah, and finally, Joseph and Benjamin. Jacob's flock swelled under his shrewd breeding. Speckled and spotted sheep multiplied like stars, until Laban's envy soured the well. I've learned by now, Jacob declared, what God has blessed, no one can curse. With his family's caravan, wives, sons, daughters, and herds, he turned his face toward Canaan, heart pounding like a drum of dread. Word raced ahead to Esau. Your brother comes with 400 men. Jacob's knees buckled. He divided his camp into two, an offering of goats, sheep, camels, cattle, 200 each, to appease the coming storm. Alone by the Jabbok ford that night, he wrestled a shadowy figure until dawn. A man? An angel? Was it God himself who wrenched Jacob's hip but renamed him Israel? You have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome. Limping into the sunrise, Israel, once Jacob the heel grabber, prepared for his brother's judgment. But when the dust cleared at dawn, there stood Esau, not with sword drawn, but with arms wide. My brother, he cried, tears carving tracks through the road grime on his face. They fell upon each other's necks, weeping like the twins they were, the birthright's shadow dissolving in the light. Esau accepted the gifts. I have plenty, my brother, keep what you have, and urged a journey together. Yet Israel, cautious as ever, demurred, let my lord go on ahead until I come to you. They parted not as enemies, but as echoes, older serving younger, yet bound by blood older than grudge. And so the heel that once grasped became the bridge across the chasm. In the land of promise, two nations stirred from one womb. Edom from Esau's wild hills, Israel from Jacob's striving souls. Their story, etched in the red dust of Canaan, whispers through the ages. A tale of rivalry redeemed, where deception's bitter fruit ripens into forgiveness's feast. This is a parable of reconciliation amid grudge. A fragile truce that history would test endlessly. For the Jewish people, this land isn't just dirt. This is the stage of both exile and return, from Egyptian bondage to Babylonian captivity, always yearning for home. But the crazy history of this land doesn't stop at scripture. Gaza itself whispers of ancient churn. It was a Canaanite outpost by about 3000 BC, and it bowed to Egyptian pharaohs, Philistine warriors, and Alexander the Great's siege in 332 BC. Empires rose and crumbled, Assyrians, Persians, Romans, each one layering conquest on the people who tilled its fields. By the 7th century CE, Arab Muslims had arrived, blending cultures while Crusaders clashed and Ottomans ruled for over 400 years. And through it all, families, Jewish, Christian, Muslim, wove lives into the warp and felt. The modern knot ties in 1948. As the British mandate unraveled post-World War II, the United Nations proposed partitioning Palestine into Jewish and Arab states. War erupted. Armies from neighboring lands clashed with the newly declared Israel. In what Palestinians called the Great Catastrophe, hundreds of thousands fled or were displaced, with many of them pouring into Gaza. Gaza was then a sliver under Egyptian oversight, but boundaries etched in 1949 trapped over 200,000 refugees along this 25-mile coastal enclave. The descendants of those 200,000 now number over 2 million. Gaza became a pressure cooker. Egyptian control until 1967, and then Israeli occupation after the Six-Day War, withdrawals and blockades becoming commonplace. At the heart of this tapestry lies a golden-domed enigma, the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, just miles from Gaza's edge. To Jews, this is the navel of the world. This is the site where King David bought a threshing floor, envisioning a house for God, and Solomon built the first temple in 957 BC. A marvel housing the Ark of the Covenant until the Babylonians raised it in 586 BC. They built again, and the second temple rose in 516 BC, only to fall to the Romans in the year 70 CE, birthing the Jewish prayer next year in Jerusalem. Today, that same platform cradles the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock. These are Islam's third holiest sites, and they were built in the 7th and 8th centuries on foundations that echoed Herod's expansions. Since Israel's 1967 capture of East Jerusalem, there's been a delicate status quo. Jordan administers the compound. Jews can visit, but they cannot pray. But tensions still simmer like embers. Jewish activists invoking messianic visions push for prayer rights, seeing this as reclaiming a spiritual birthright, while Palestinians view any intrusion as an assault on sovereignty. This ignites clashes with stones from one side and tear gas from the other. In 2023, visits surged, fueling riots that rippled into Gaza. For Jews, this is not conquest, but connection, a place where heaven touched the earth. It fuels holidays like Yom Kippur, and any peace must thread this needle. There must be mutual access without erasure of one or the other. Biblically, it recalls Abraham's near sacrifice of Isaac on the nearby mount, a test of faith amid fear. Can today's heirs of the mount echo that faith amid fear? Today's conflict stems from a terror attack that occurred on October 7th, 2023, nearly 2 years ago today. The terrorist Hamas group joined with other allied Palestinian forces that had taken refuge in the secret tunnels beneath Gaza. They stormed over the Israeli border, resulting in the deaths of approximately 1,200 people in total, the vast majority of whom were Israeli citizens, and an additional 71 of whom were foreign nationals. In the same attacks, militants abducted 251 people and took them into Gaza as hostages, including approximately 247 Israeli citizens, with the remainder consisting of foreign nationals, dual citizens, and Bedouins. Since that day, fighting has only escalated. And now, we come to that 20-point U.S. plan on the table for peace. Unveiled by President Trump, this sketches a path out of the abyss. Hostage releases for ceasefires, phased Israeli pullback from Gaza. Hamas's military will be dismantled. Its rule over Gaza will end. Without the expulsion of any Palestinians who want to stay. A new Gaza will emerge, demilitarized, open for trade, rebuilt with international aid. There will be ports, there will be schools, there will be farms. The Palestinian Authority will step in for governance, and a Trump-led Board of Peace will ensure that no arms slip through. For Israel, this means security. The borders will breathe easier, the threats will be neutralized, the economy will be unbound from the war's drag. And for Gaza, this means a rebirth. 2 million souls will trade fish for tech hubs. Youth will be in classrooms, not bunkers. And it will end the blockade's bite that has been in place since 2007. Hamas demands amendments. They want a full withdrawal of Israeli forces, no disarmament, and should they reject the peace deal, Israel will finish the job. Egypt and Qatar both pledge reconstruction. Rafah crossings are wide for aid, Sinai buffers against the spillover. Saudi Arabia and Pakistan signal Arab buy-ins. And potentially unlocking normalization with Israel. Trade across the nation. This would be huge for them. The U.S. anchors it all with Europe and the United Nations eyes. But guardians will become guarantors. Jordan will take over the mount. The United Arab Emirates in security pacts. Nations called to enforce, lest old feuds will fray the cloth. A pathway to Palestinian statehood glimmers, but only if trust threads the seams. In the heart of the prophetic book of Isaiah, chapter 2 unfolds a breathtaking vision of hope amid a world shadowed by conflict. The prophet Isaiah, speaking around the 8th century BC during a turbulent era of the divided kingdoms of Israel and Judah, paints a picture not of despair but of divine restoration. This oracle is set in the latter days, and it transports us to a time when humanity's fractured path converges on the holy mountain of the Lord, the grand temple in Jerusalem rising like a beacon above the nations. Isaiah envisions a pilgrimage of people. In the days to come, the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established as the highest of the mountains and shall be raised above the hills. All nations shall stream into it. From every corner of the earth, diverse crowds flow upward, drawn not by force but by a magnetic yearning for wisdom. They seek instruction from the God of Jacob, whose ways illuminate the path to justice and harmony. It's a global convocation where borders are blurred and old animosities dissolve in the light of shared faith. At the vision's core, verse 4 bursts forth like a thunderclap of transformation. The Lord shall judge between the nations and shall arbitrate for many people. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nations shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. Here, the raw instruments of violence, swords forged in fire for slaughter, spears honed for piercing, undergo a sacred alchemy. In blacksmiths' forges, not of wrath, but of redemption. These weapons are hammered flat and reshaped. The curved blade of a sword becomes the straight edge of a plowshare, turning soil for bountiful harvests instead of spilling blood. The spear's shaft, once a tool of conquest, is bent into a pruning hook, trimming vines for vineyards that yield the wine of celebration, not rivers of sorrow. And this isn't just a metaphor, it's a radical reordering of human endeavor. War, that ancient teacher of destruction, is unlearned. Its academies are shattered, its drills are forgotten. Nations once locked in cycles of retaliation now submit to God's impartial arbitration, resolving disputes through counsel rather than carnage. The fields that once echoed with battle cries now hum with the rhythm of sowing and reaping, a symphony of peace where the lion lies down with the lamb. For Isaiah, this vision isn't a utopian fantasy. It's the inevitable fruit of turning back to God, a promise woven in the fabric of covenant history, urging the faithful to walk in his light and forsake the darkness. This passage has echoed through a millennia, inspiring peace movements, artworks, and even the United Nations' famous sculpture of swords into plowshares. It's a clarion call. In the shadow of judgment comes the dawn of shalom. Wholeness, not just the absence of war, but the presence of created communal flourishing. Isaiah's words remind us that true security isn't in arsenals, but in the courage to repurpose them for life. As we leave each other for today, I want you to remember the heart of the story is brothers, Isaac and Ishmael. They relearn forgiveness. They embrace each other. From temple whispers to Gaza's gates, peace isn't an erasure. It's an embroidery on shared scars. Thanks for walking this path with me today, guys. I want you to share your reflections. Subscribe for more episodes. Get out there. The sun is shining. It's a beautiful day. Thank the Creator for everything that He's given us. Pray for peace. Pray for faith. Pray for understanding. Pray for each other. Go out there and find someone that you can find that common thread with and enjoy your day. Until next time, guys. Thank you. Bye-bye.